Today we're starting a new series on the book of Proverbs. And the book of Proverbs is pretty much in the middle of your Bible, although if you only use a digital device, I'm not quite sure how that works. It used to be you could pretty much kind of flick it open, and there's a reasonable chance you could get close to the book of Proverbs. You'd probably land in Psalms or Jeremiah, but there it is. It's right in the middle. And we're going to be starting this series today. I'm going to do an introduction for us today to get the ball kicked off. And then next week, we've got Rob sitting down the front. Rob Hens is going to be taking on the next step. And we're going to be journeying on this for the coming weeks. How many of you have ever had buyer's regret? I love the awkward laugh, because the awkward laugh is the acknowledgement in a safe community that we have all had buyer's regret. Those times when, through the power of our own self-deception and believing the lies and even wanting to believe the marketing, we convinced ourselves that something that was for sale, we didn't just want, but we needed it. That it would make our life better. And if there was someone else to convince financially that we should be engaged in this purchase, all of a sudden, we became great orators of marketing brilliance, convincing and pitching and presenting what our life could look like, how we could go from the boredom and the mundane that we are now currently in to a life of paradise if we engage in this purchase, and how we too could have happiness once again. And then someone else involved in that conversation either bought the vision and said, yes, let us do this foolish thing. This wonderful thing, I mean. Or they said, I don't think that's a good idea. But we went ahead and we bought it anyway. And we were so happy for the first 5 seconds. We may have even been happier for a bit longer than that. But a little bit down the track, sometimes it's as you're walking to the car, carrying the actual bag of whatever it is you purchased. Sometimes it's days later. Sometimes it's months later. Sometimes it's 2 years later when the payment plan option's still continuing. When the bank says, you still owe us 64 payments on that personal loan. When you're like, the thing that I really want now, I now can't get because I bought that thing that I thought would change my life and it really didn't. Buyer's regret. And we all pretty much know about that, apart from a few incredibly wise people in here who've never had that. And for you, I'm a little bit sad that you've never had that experience of life, because it's part of our growth and development, isn't it? Have you ever said the phrase, if only I could do this over again? If only I had a thought about this more. If only I had a consultant, someone else who knew more about this. My dad, I consider to be a pretty wise guy, even though he has many stories of examples of the opposite that he tells me and my two brothers and has told us many times over, sometimes in new creative versions, but we know the stories inside out. But he had a phrase. My dad was pretty much like a Proverbs type dad. He always had like a funny phrase for everything. When I was trying to learn the vowels of the alphabet, I couldn't remember them. So he told me a little story to help me remember. And he told me the AE was a person and that I owed AE something. So he said, AE, I owe you. And he'd just say, you just say whatever it is, a dollar. And now you know the now you know the vowels. And I'm like, A-E-I-O-U. Oh, yes. It's like he had so many of them. Did anyone have a parent who just had a little phrase for everything in here? Can I get a show of hands? Is anyone that parent in here that has a little phrase for everything? Ryan Smith, 100% you are that guy. Yeah, it's awesome. I love those people. I'm a bit jealous of those people because I fail to come up with them, but I love those people who can come up with those phrases that stick in our minds. And this was one that my dad used to say all the time to me and my brothers. He used to say, remember, you win or lose by the way you choose. You win or lose by the way you choose. Now, when you're 14, that doesn't mean anything. When you're 24, it barely means anything. When you're 34, it means everything. When you're 44, you're like, gosh, I was an idiot. When you're 54, you're telling everyone that phrase. I'm not 54 yet, just in case you just went along with that and assumed I was. Today we're going to talk about what Proverbs has to say to us. And I want to begin by reading Proverbs from the very first chapter in the first seven verses. It says here, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Solomon is attributed to be the writer of the book of Proverbs, of which he only contributed some of the book of Proverbs. But the reason why he's associated as being the author of, because he brings weight to it, because he was known as the wisest person who ever lived. In 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 29 to 33, it speaks of him as being the wisest man who ever lived. And I always wonder about that, because I'm like, that guy had thousands of concubines and wives. So I always go, interesting. Not sure how that fully worked in that particular season of his life, but maybe this was after that. 1 Kings 4... chapter 4 says that he wrote over 3,000 proverbs. That's a pretty good effort, considering that there's only 914 of them in the book of Proverbs. Now, either that's because lots of them weren't worth putting into the book of Proverbs, or someone who was editing it all and putting it together went, okay, that's way too many. We got enough here. If people could just learn these 914, they'd be doing pretty well. So he gets attributed to this, and as often in lots of scripture, you get someone who is recognizable and seen as the symbol that is the author of this particular section. And so, really, the Proverbs is a collection of collections of sayings and proverbs. And it says in verse 2 that these Proverbs of Solomon are for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior. When you're young, the word prudent is kind of like the opposite of living. Doesn't it seem like that? It's like, if your parent came to you and said, hey, I just want to really encourage you to be prudent, you're just going to go, thanks for that. I'm just going to go eat what I want, wear what I want, not put any sunscreen on, go and live however I want to went, joyfully, and have fun, and show you how... whatever that word that starts with a P, it sounds very boring and old-fashioned, is not relevant for my life. It's for receiving instruction in prudent behavior and doing what is right and just and fair. It's for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Verse 5, let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. Verse 6, for understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. And then a really interesting verse in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. This is a really interesting beginning to the book of Proverbs. And at the end of this little section, this phrase here, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, is a phrase that's been misunderstood so often throughout church history as being this idea that we're meant to live as this scouring, scared people under a scary God who's waiting up in heaven for us to mess up and to be foolish or stupid. And at what point judgment is going to be cast down upon us. And that this verse should tell us, is telling us that we should be scared of this God who's in charge of everything, and we should be very careful not to upset this God. So the fear of the Lord's the beginning of knowledge. But that's not what the phrase "the fear of the Lord" means. The phrase "the fear of the Lord" means reverence and awe. It includes moral responsibility. Or another way of thinking about this is this idea that I am not the God of all creation. I am not the creator. And I need God's wisdom for how to conduct my life in this world. And when you understand that, you can understand why Solomon writes here that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. In other words, if you want to have insight and you want to know how life works, let your starting point be, I don't know everything, but I do want to understand the Creator who knows everything. And I don't want to live my life in such a way, so foolishly or so ignorant, that I don't give respect and honor to the Creator of this extraordinary universe. To live any other way is utter foolishness. So the book of Proverbs is pretty much a guide for living the good life in God's good world. The book of Proverbs draws on the teachings of the Hebrew Scriptures over a long period of time. And it's an opportunity for us to learn from the wise reflections of those who have gone before us and reflected on how life really works. But if you want to understand the book of Proverbs, you've got to understand it in its genre and in its context. This is so important. Because the book of Proverbs sits in what's called the wisdom literature of Scripture. The wisdom literature is considered to be these three books: the book of Proverbs, the book of Ecclesiastes, and the book of Job. And they're really encouraging us through their writings to think about what kind of world are we living in, how do we make sense of it, and how do we deal with it, especially as it relates to the questions of life and even pain and suffering. The book of Proverbs does this really clever thing in really personifying all of this wisdom as what it calls Lady Wisdom. Lady Wisdom. Basically, Lady Wisdom roams around the world calling out and making herself available to anyone who is willing to listen. Everyone gets the chance to learn from Lady Wisdom. The Hebrew word for wisdom is what's called chokmah. And it's not simply intellectual knowledge. It's knowledge that's applied and lived out in our lives in the day-to-day. The word's also used to describe a skilled artisan who excels at their craft. And this is the idea that someone who possesses chokmah, when you put it to work, they develop the skill in making a good life, a life that is lived well, where others look at this person's life and they're grateful for the way they are conducting their life. Because their life is not only blessing to themselves, but more importantly, it actually brings about blessing for others rather than a life that's not lived well, that actually causes pain and suffering sometimes for others as a result of their decisions and choices. So the invitation of the book of Proverbs is an invitation to hear the voice of wisdom. To fear the Lord and to say, God, in reverence and in awe of you, I see myself not as the one who is the master of life, but as the one who is the student of life, the learner. Much like being a disciple, the pupil, the student, the one who is going to learn the way, as we often say in the context of learning the way of Jesus. Some of you will have known Tim Mackey of the Bible Project. He's got a really great phrase for understanding how we should think about the wisdom literature. And he talks about how, if you can imagine the book of Proverbs and the book of Ecclesiastes and the book of Job, if they were a person, the Proverbs would be a little bit like a brilliant young teacher. And Ecclesiastes would be a little bit like a sharp middle-aged critic. And Job would be this weathered old person who's seen a lot in their day. And it's really important to understand this, because you need to read the book of Proverbs through the lens of all of the wisdom literature together. Because if you approach the book of Proverbs in isolation, the danger is that you will read certain scenarios as black and white statements without understanding the journey that life is so much more complicated than just a black and white wisdom statement. If you've ever been the recipient of someone who's quoted a proverb at you and it's felt a little bit like a dart, then I just want to say I'm really sorry. Hopefully it wasn't me. But I grew up in a church culture where we quoted verses at one another, and we saw that as being spiritual. We see someone behaving a certain way, there's a verse for that. We see someone having a hard time, I got a verse for that. Someone makes a foolish decision, I got a verse for that. We see some young person, mainly young people, making a silly decision that we know so much more about because we pretty much made the same decision. And instead of sitting down with them and journeying with them, we go, hey, you should read Proverbs chapter 6, verse 17, you know. And we've got a verse for everything. The danger of that is we deliver verses, and what ends up happening, and I can share this personally because having been a pastor for a pretty long time now, I've had conversations with couples, with seniors, and with young people who have come to me and said, I don't understand why this is happening to me in my life, because Proverbs says. And what they're basically saying is it seems a little bit too simplistic sometimes. Like a classic example of the proverb that says, if you bring up your children in the way they should go, later on they will not depart from it. It's a good verse. And it's generally true, but not always. Because I bet you know someone, or maybe you are the person who's gone, we did the very best to bring up our children the very best way we knew how. And here's part of the problem with just throwing out verses to people. Instead of reflecting on these as verses that we can learn about how things generally are and apply this wisdom to our lives, we do one of a couple of mistakes. We judge others harshly and say, well, obviously they didn't bring their kids up in the way of the Lord or in the right way, because look how they're living. And we compare them to our children who happen to be amazingly living the way we're so proud of. Look at my wonderful children. They're all... And I see this happen at pastors' conferences. And I never got it when I was younger, but I'd be at pastors' conferences and you'd hear some preacher talk about what every one of their children are now doing for God around the world as missionaries or as future pastors or as, you know, serving God, or they're in the music team or they've, you know, become the president. And you sit there and just go, man, I'm so happy for you. I mean, as if you wouldn't want to celebrate the good things that your children are experiencing. But a couple of things we need to consider. One, probably their success might not be 100% attributed to you. Two, even if it was, that's not everybody else's story also. So let's be aware of others and understand that in the congregation, and I know this for a fact because I've sat at retreats where I've heard pastors pour out their lives and their stories and try to wrestle with the fact that they have one child who seems to, at the moment, to be walking the way of life that's bringing blessing in their life and to others. And then they have another child who's seemingly destroying their life And so many people carry the burden of shame and carry that burden of going, where did I go wrong? And here's what's so complicated about this. The Proverbs are there as instruction for wisdom so that in our now today, we can apply them to our life. Not to retrospectively go back and use them as ammunition on ourselves or others. They're an invitation for us to say, hey, we have young children. Let's do the very best we can. Let's be intentional about bringing them up in the way they should go. And there's every chance that they will live that way as they get older. But every parent in this room knows, and every human being in this room knows, we don't do all the things that our parents invited us to do we? Some of them, we should be rebelling and walking away from them, but all the good stuff, we actually weren't always doing. And sometimes when we're judging others or we're judging ourselves, we haven't yet heard the end of the story. That's another aspect to it. So what am I trying to say in all this? I'm trying to say this complexity. And if you use Proverbs in a way too simplistically, it can cause pain and heartache for others, which is why we need to have them sit. When we read Proverbs, we then need to read Ecclesiastes and see all the questions that Solomon is reflecting on. And then we need to read the book of Job, where we realize, wow, life really isn't as clean and as simple as it once seemed. And when we hold them in tension together, we have the opportunity to learn in wisdom and in community together. A couple of things that wisdom is not, and a couple of things that wisdom is. The book of Proverbs, as wisdom, is not the law. It's not a thou shalt, not or a thou shalt. And it's also not prophecy. It's not God says. So if you've been living your life treating a particular proverb as a promise of God, I would be very careful about how you manage that. And here's where this gets, again, super complicated. Because someone takes a proverb out of its genre, context, and purpose, experiences the fruit and the benefit of that in their life, and assumes it's a promise that everyone else can expect as a fact and a reality in their life. Again, wisdom would tell us to be very careful in the way we consider this. Proverbs is not a law. Proverbs is not a prophecy. It is a collection of reflections on how life generally is. And the wise will listen for Lady Wisdom's voice in that and say, how can I take this wisdom and apply it to my life? And not just see myself as, well, I'm going to be the exception to the rule. Do you know those people that like, do you know what? I know that smoking, they say smoking's bad for you. But you know what? My grandma lived to like 97 and she like smoked a pack a day. Probably I'm going to be like that too. So I'm just going to smoke too. Now, everyone else would go, that's foolishness. But here's the thing. Are you going to live your life on the one rare exception, or are you going to listen to the words of wisdom and go, I don't know. So wisdom would say, don't do something that for the most has caused incredible heartache for them. People do it all the time with like sunscreen. I did it too. I got a friend, they live forever. They never use sunscreen. I could have their skin. So I'm not going to have sunscreen. We're like, I'll be right. And then you have a doctor's appointment and they go, oh yeah, you got a few sun things here. We're going to have to do a bit more research. And then your heart starts pounding. And what do you do in your head? You're sitting in the waiting room going, oh man, I should have used sunscreen. I'm so dumb. Why don't I use sunscreen? And we get all down on ourselves because we violated wisdom. This is the tension we live in. And I'm going to talk about what you do in a moment when you realize you have violated wisdom. Proverbs, rather, is the insights of God's people over generations of how things generally are. Here's what I know for a fact about my life, and here's what I know most probably about your life. Nobody plans to mess up their lives. Would you agree with me? Like, did any of you wake up this morning and go, huh, Sunday morning, 16th of April, is it the 16th today? Yeah. This could be the day that I just like totally, royally mess my life up. Let's get this down. Get my task list out. How could I go about messing my life up today? well, I'm going to make a really silly financial decision. I'm going to like choose to hang out with the wrong crowd. I'm going to date someone who is going to be the worst kind of person for me to date. No one does that. And even as I say that, you're like going, that's totally absurd. But here's the thing. Nobody plans to mess up their lives. Few people plan not to. The issue is one of intentionality. And this is why Proverbs can serve us so well. Because if I choose to intentionally do what Proverbs suggests and listen to wise counsel, I'm intentionally positioning myself to learn from the experience and the insights of other people, knowing full well that I do not have a full, appropriate, clear view of my life and all of life. So it will serve me well to be intentional in my present towards my future. There are three people in the book of Proverbs that jump out at us. There is the fool, there is the simpleton, and there is the wise person that is often referred to. The fool is the person who knows what is wrong, but chooses to go ahead and do it the silly thing anyway. That is totally foolish. They just blindly walk into what they know is going to be destructive. The simpleton is the ignorant person. Good-hearted, nice, how are you going? But just doesn't know and just makes silly decisions and choices. And Proverbs is inviting us to be neither the fool, the simpleton, but to choose to be the wise person. Proverbs 1, 32 to 33 says, "For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me," in other words, wisdom, "will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm." In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul says these words in Ephesians chapter 5. He says, "Be very careful then how you live." In other words, consider the way you're living. This really means slowing down, paying attention. The other day, a pastor met with me, who's 10 years younger than me, and asked me a question and said, when they were chatting, they said, "You're a decade ahead of me." I was like, "Thanks for reminding me. What could you tell me that could serve me well for the next decade?" And I'm like, "Oh gosh, I don't know." And I was put on the spot, and all these thoughts just started racing in my head, all these tips, all these like good pieces of advice that were pretty much like things I got wrong, that you should not do this. And then I said to them, pretty much one of those, but I said, "Go slower. Go slower." He's like, "What? Tell me about that. What's that mean? What do you mean by go slower?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's hard to hear when you're 38, because I didn't want to hear it when I was 28, didn't want to hear it when I was 38, didn't want to hear it when I was 47. And I'm 48. I'm ready to hear it now. Go slower. In other words, what I was saying was, be very careful how you live. Consider the way you live your life and consider what's important. Paul says here, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. We'll talk about this in a few weeks' time. What does it mean to understand what the Lord's will is? James, the brother of Jesus, in the book of James says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." For many years, I've shared a phrase with people that have come to chat to me about their lives. I've used it in coaching. I've used it in pastoral context. I've used it on my own life. And it's a statement by Andy Stanley, who, when it comes to wisdom and wise living, I'm like, this guy is just brilliant at communicating this. And he has a phrase that has served me and others so well, and this is it. To live wise is to consider, in light of my past experience, my present circumstances, and future hopes and dreams, what's the wise thing for me to do? And I love this, because what we often do is, we struggle with alcohol, so we tell people, you shouldn't drink alcohol. We struggle with what shows we should watch on television, so we make rules for other people about what they should or shouldn't watch or listen. Instead of inviting people to self-reflect and to consider wisely, what does it mean for you to be wise and to live the good life that God is inviting you to live? And so a way to break this down and think about this is to say, listen, given my past experience, my tendencies, what's happened in the past to me, What decision should I make now in light of those dynamics? If I've made poor decisions financially, then in light of that pattern of behavior, what would be wise for me to do? I should seek counsel. I should get wisdom. I should find people who are really good at this. If I've made poor decisions as it relates to the stuff that I've put into my head over the years, and I've had an addiction, then I should say, in the light of my past circumstances, what's the wise thing for me to do? If you've been addicted to social media, in the light of your past, what's the wise thing to do? Delete the apps. But you gotta decide, you gotta discern for yourself. This is wisdom. In the light of my present circumstances, man, I'm in high stress at the moment. I'm feeling overwhelmed and exhausted. Is this the time for me to make a major life decision? I don't know. I can't tell you. But you should reflect in the light of your past and the light of your present circumstances, what would be the wise thing for you to do? And then to consider in the light of your future hopes and dreams. My future hopes and dreams have changed a lot since I was younger. But when I think about the kind of kids that Therese and I want to raise, when I think about the story that I'd like to be told of how I live my life, I need to make choices and decisions now that are going to be in alignment with that. Because, man, I've made some dumb ones. I want to finish today and invite the musicians to come forwards. And I want to finish by suggesting two things today. First of all, I want to encourage our whole church over the next 31 days to read a proverb a day. You don't have to do it, but I just think it'd be a cool thing to do. And as you read each proverb, I want you to ask yourself the question, what do I need to learn, or what are you teaching me today? What do I need to learn today? One of the greatest gifts we give ourselves and others is to take on the commitment to be a learner. To say, what can I learn today? And if you're here today, and when you think about your life and your life's choices, it's very easy to read the book of Proverbs and to feel shame. It's very easy to hear a preacher like me talk about decisions and choices and you win or lose by the way you choose, and immediately for your brain to start thinking of all the areas in your life where you've messed up. Where maybe your choices impacted somebody else, whether that was your children, your spouse, your family, maybe your own sense of well-being, your own sense of peace. Because the reality is, there is a fact of life. When you make a choice, every choice has some kind of outcome. Sometimes it's felt immediately, sometimes it's felt down the track. When we are tempted, there is always more at stake than we realize in the moment. Oh, it's just this, or it's just going to be that. And then we get a little further down the track and we realize, oh man. I had a dad come and meet with me one day, and he broke down in my office many years ago. And he said, he used all kinds of choice words and to basically say he's messed his life up so bad. Yeah, but he just said, that's not what I'm angry and upset about. I'm angry and I'm upset with myself because I messed my son's life up. Because he said, every time I heard a warning to go and get some help for the addiction he had, he went, I'll be right. I can sort it out and it's just me. It's my problem. But what he didn't realize was that his son got access to the things that was part of his addiction, and he found out his son, through his foolishness and not considering the whole impact of his decisions, ended up walking down the exact same road of him. And he's like, what do I do? And I said, well, here's the thing. You and me and everyone else on the planet's in the same boat. You can't do anything about what has happened. It is what it is, other than take full responsibility to acknowledge that like you're doing now, and to walk in the way of grace and forgiveness and hope that God invites you to. And to say today, I'm going to take full responsibility that my decision today is to listen to the voice of wisdom. My decision today is to rectify and to make good wherever I can, and where I cannot is to fully own that, take responsibility, apologize for that, and to seek the walk from this day forward, the path of wisdom. And I want to say to every single person in this room here today, if you're carrying shame or guilt or any form of heaviness around the decisions and the choices that you have made in your life, hear the voice of grace today. God is for you. He is not against you. He is inviting you to the good life, and He covers and He forgives and He invites you to walk in wholeness and goodness and freedom. And we got to start kicking out shame in our community and in our culture and start making it easy for people to say, yeah, I struggle with this. Yeah, I have this addiction. Yeah, I have this problem. Yeah, I was unwise. Yeah, I made foolish decisions about this. But I don't want to hide that. I want to be free. I want to find a safe community that can journey with me in walking the good life of wisdom that God invites me to. And remember these words. God's mercies are new every day. Great is His faithfulness. Mercies are new every day. Whatever it is that comes to your mind, spring it before God and say, here it is, God. What would wisdom have me do next? What would wisdom have me do next?